While world leaders grapple with North Korea's nuclear ambitions, one of the issues we've been exploring here on Saturday Extra is the importance of trust and relationships between people in times of international crisis. The dilemma, of course, is that when it comes to North Korea, not many Western countries have those people-to-people relations at all, which makes my next guest very special. Anne's a North Korean defector studying here in Australia. Anne, and due to security concerns, that's not her real name, Anne and four other North Korean students have been selected to attend a 30-week intensive English language course at the University of Technology. A driving force behind this scheme is Bronwyn Dalton, who's director of the Masters of Not-for-Profit and Community Management program at UTS, and they both joined me earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've been studying in Sydney now for 2 months. How are you finding it?
It's just like a time flying. I feel like I came yesterday, so it means I enjoy it every day.
Is it terribly different to what you were used to?
Comparing to North Korea, it's different, huge different. But comparing to the South Korea, it's not different.
And just the land, the air, the climate, how different is that to what you were used to in South Korea?
Wow, huge difference is Australia and Sydney has clear air. And then also there's a lot of park.
Oh, really? Yeah. That strikes you?
Yeah.
And so you've gone to a lot of travel places, have you?
Yes. I went to the Blue Mountain a few weeks ago. And then I went to the Bondi Beach last weekend.
Of course, you have to go to Bondi Beach.
Yes.
And what about the multicultural society that you meet in some of our big cities? Now, did that surprise you?
Yes, it is a surprise because I'm living in South Korea. It's not the capital. I'm living in Daegu, which is the most conservative city in South Korea. It's hard to meet another people. Like, I mean,
so it's monocultural, really?
It is.
So this is a bit of a surprise.
It is a surprise because it's like every day I woke up, I can taste all the food.
I suppose I wondered whether you were surprised by the number of Asian region faces you find here.
Oh, yeah, it is. I think it's because I'm taking an English class, but there's a lot of Chinese people. Majorities are Chinese, but I think it's good. I used to learn Chinese, and then I think that it's challenged me to learning English and Chinese same time.
Oh my goodness, Mandarin.
Yeah, Mandarin.
Let me ask Bronwyn how these scholarships came about.
We started first with a pilot program for a couple of years. We wanted to get it just right. So we had, with the support of UTS InSearch, and the Australia Korea Foundation, and also the Australian Korean community here in Sydney, we had these pilot programs where they'd come out, and then we applied formally for funding from the Department of Foreign Affairs Australia Korea Foundation, and also to the Korean Ministry of Unification in their section, the Hana Foundation. They have a lot of programs for North Korean refugees.
So that's part of the South Korean government, is it?
Part of the South Korean government, yes.
I've never heard of that one.
Yes, so three partners, really.
And what was the motive? Like, what's the mission of it?
So with my colleague at UTS, I've received substantial funding to do research into the rise of capitalism in North Korea. I've been there several times and interviewed many, many North Korean refugees, and became increasingly aware of the discrimination and challenges North Korean citizens face in South Korea in terms of making a successful life. They suffer reasonable amount of discrimination.
Right.
There's now 30,000 North Korean refugees living in South Korea. And there's many challenges about making the transition to the South Korean society. And one of the biggest barriers is a lack of English.
Said capitalism in North Korea, didn't you?
There's a form of capitalism in North Korea, but it still doesn't really prepare the North Korean refugees to survive in capitalism, South Korean
Which is
style.
Pretty full on.
Yes.
I can attest to that.
Yes. But there definitely is emerging capitalism in North Korea, and that's what we've been studying. But anyway, you know, sometimes academics, we write all these articles that maybe no one reads, but after interviewing so many refugees, I really felt it was something practical I could do, given I did have connections with those agencies. And in particular, I pitched to the South Korean government. I said, please don't make the same mistake as we did with our Indigenous people and let disadvantage become intergenerational. Because this is the first generation of North Korean refugees. If we together intervene and provide opportunity, then people like Anne and the other wonderful students who are just excellent have great capacity to return as leaders to their community.
I know you can't talk in detail about how you fled North Korea, but maybe you could tell us what you can. What made you take this very brave step?
The reason I decided to escape in North Korea because my family had been financial difficulty for a long time since my dad had to work another city. So that's why my mom alone took care of us.
And how many in the family?
I had a younger sister who is almost 9 years younger than me.
9 years younger than you. And even though you were young, did you wonder or even know about the outside world?
I watched some of the Western movie. It's called James Bond.
The James Bond.
Yes. And then I watched some of my friends. We closed all the door and then kind of intense, but I enjoyed it a lot.
You have, in watching Western movies in North Korea, you have to actually do it in secret.
Oh, I see.
That's why she's closed all the doors.
Wow. Sean Connery and Daniel, whatever his name is, would be extremely happy about that.
When I got in South Korea, I just discovered the actor is really old.
Oh, Sean Connery. Yeah, he is really old. That's
you thought,
right.
You thought he was young.
Yes. Yeah.
But the new one's young.
Yes. But I kind of wondering the outside. I never thought about it because I think it depends on the family situation. My family wasn't wealthy, so I always cared about, worry about the meals.
So the small things related to your family.
That's right.
And I think you had an incident where you were very hungry, your family, and you ate UN food supplies, a particular set of biscuits.
It was a very long time ago. Just when I think about the stories or like a childhood, I feel really warm.
Warm.
Also, I remembered all the people's face. It's just, all my classmates.
Do you miss aspects? You're freer now, but obviously you miss aspects too. Is that right?
Yes, I miss all friends, especially one of my best friends. Sometimes I'm wondering, is he still alive or is he get married, have child or...
That's a difficult situation, I can imagine. After a person defects, as you did, does the North Korean government know that you are gone?
Well, I was a child and I don't have any impact on the society. So probably they know, but it doesn't get the impact, negative impact to my relatives who live still.
Really? So they don't suffer because you got out?
Oh, yeah. If I'm working in like a government or like, the military, it could be very negative impact on them.
How old were you when you left?
I was 14.
My goodness. Yeah. Were you on your own?
Yes. I remember it was like after class. It was when I crossed the river. When I escaped in North Korea, I wearing the uniform.
So what are you studying in South Korea and how useful will a good grasp of English be?
I'm studying international trade. So I would like to study it in logistics, specifically supply management, because I would like to work in UN. So that's why I think that I should specialize this field.
So, Bronwyn, this is very interesting to hear the big aspirations, isn't it? So, by the time Anne does leave, say next February, with the others, are all the others going back at the same time?
Yes.
Do you imagine that they will be much more proficient in English?
As I mentioned, this is we were doing the program again last year as well, and the difference is absolutely phenomenal, and not just in English language ability, but their confidence, their international outlook, and in particular, I think more than any other cohort of student that we bring to Australia, their love of Australia becomes quite deep, because this is the first sort of Western country that they go to. And we've found that the graduates of this program are absolute passionate ambassadors. So it's really great for the Australia-Korean relationship that we can have a hand in creating the next leaders that come out of that country.
And obviously exemplified by considerable levels of trust.
Yes. And they give back when they go back to their own communities in terms of by example, showing that you can be successful, you can master English, you can succeed. That's a really positive story that they take back to their own community.
Well, look, congratulations. This is the second group I know of North Koreans to arrive. So good luck to you, Anne.
Thank you.
I wish you luck in the world of trade. And Bronwyn, congratulations for setting this up.
Well, thank you very much to
all the
Department
other
of Foreign Affairs, to
sure
UTS InSearch, and to the Hana Foundation of the Korean government. It's marvellous your support.
Bronwyn Dalton there, who's the director of the not-for-profit and community management program at the University of Technology, Sydney. She's also a board member of DFAT's Australia-Korea Foundation, and Anne, a North Korean defector who's on a scholarship here in Australia. And I hope you enjoyed that much more personal aspect of that story that dominates our headlines in a sometimes a rather, well, terrifying and abstract way.